People sometimes ask me why anyone would choose to serve on the school board. They're wondering, what's in it for me? Why would I take a position where I will be the sounding board for people's frustration and anger? Why would I willingly invest so much time and energy in something for which I get paid nothing? Besides, being a school board member is a political position. It's politics. Actually, the word politics has an interesting etymology. It comes from the Latin root poly, meaning many, and ticks, which are blood-sucking parasites. I have to give credit for that to Irma Howard, whom some of you know. In spite of these negative things, there are compelling reasons why I choose to serve on the school board. Most of you are teachers. You work with children every day, patiently helping them acquire knowledge and learn how to get along with each other. You encourage them to learn about their world and follow the 10 ethical principles, and to obtain the information, skills, and character traits they need in order to take their places as leaders and contributors of a new generation, as well as their places as wives and husbands, fathers and mothers, and friends. Others of you, like me, have supporting roles of one kind or another in the crucial task of training and molding a new generation. Some of you bring our children to school, or feed them, or train our teachers, or maintain our infrastructure. Yet your mission is fundamentally the same. You're working to help our children, and the credit for our success belongs to you as well as to those who teach. Do you sometimes wonder what happens to the children you help? Do you wonder about that little girl who was so shy and fearful? Or about that active little boy who showed so much creativity? Do you wonder what became of them? Do you ever wonder whether you really make a difference in their lives? Last fall, I went to a conference and celebration honoring my dissertation advisor, Fred Brooks, on the occasion of his 70th birthday. It was not only a birthday celebration, it was also a celebration in honor of his election to the National Academy of Sciences. When Fred was still in his 30s, he had already accomplished a great deal in the field of computer science. He held numerous patents and was the lead architect of the line of computers that thrust IBM into the forefront of the mainframe market. But Fred wanted more than anything to be a teacher. So he left IBM and founded the computer science department at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. At Fred's birthday bash, hundreds of his former students came from all over the world to honor him and to give presentations about their accomplishments. It was good to see my former teachers and classmates again since I had been gone for over 25 years. As I listened to former students make presentations about their current work, I was amazed at what they had achieved and the jobs they held. For example, several were chief scientists for large corporations. Many were doing cutting-edge research on important applications of computers in daily life. Fred's former students were key contributors to progress in the field of computer science. A common theme among all the presentations was the difference that Fred had made in their lives. Fred's former students spoke of his encouragement, as well as his example of integrity and scholarship and diligence. They spoke of his effect on their personal lives, as well as their professional lives. In my case, Fred not only mentored me professionally, but was also a major factor in my later becoming a Christian, although, of course, the real credit for that belongs to God. Not only students spoke, but faculty and staff as well. Fred's secretary told of a time when IBM had offered a large grant to the fledgling computer science department, and how Fred had suggested that IBM split that money among the three major universities in the area. That altruistic proposal cost the department two-thirds of the amount of the grant, but it cemented the relationships between the three computer science departments and built a community of cooperation in the area. Today, the Raleigh-Durham Chapel Hill area is a prominent center for high-tech research and development. Fred's wisdom in looking beyond immediate personal gain served as an example to his colleagues and his students. His influence changed the way they made decisions, and the world is better for it. Before the conference, I was well aware of the enormous impact this great teacher had had on my life. I already respected him as a scholar, as a scientist, as a man, and as a mentor. However, until that conference, I was not really aware of the wide-ranging extent of his influence. At the conference, person after person spoke of the difference he had made in their lives. I began to realize that during the course of his career, Fred had not just influenced me, he had greatly influenced hundreds and maybe thousands of people for the good. Then I realized that his influence is still multiplying, for the people he influenced are influencing others. The scientists he taught are teaching others. His influence even extends to Austin, for my desire to serve the educational community was sparked by his example of civic responsibility and his desire to invest his life in educating others. Attending that conference, just one conference, honoring one teacher, was an eye-opening experience for me. An effective teacher, one who can really challenge and encourage his or her students, makes a huge positive difference in our world. When I talk about challenging students and encouraging students, I'm speaking of a task that requires a great deal of wisdom. To challenge a student does not mean never being satisfied with the work they've done. Each child has a different set of talents and abilities. Each child is at a different maturity level in various areas of development. A single standard of academic achievement does not fit every student. Our job is to understand each child, from the learning disabled to the most talented, and fire his or her imagination and help that student make the next step to grow in knowledge, skill, and character. Our job is to prepare each child to be the best he can be. We do need to challenge each child, but not to the breaking point, not to the point of discouragement. This is why education is and will remain a personal job, a job that depends heavily on the skill and intuition and the wisdom of trained teachers. When I talk about encouraging students, again, this is a task that requires a great deal of wisdom. It is not helpful to fill students with empty praise. It is not helpful to set expectations so low that minimal effort is sufficient. The self-esteem movement of the 90s suggested that all work should be uncritically accepted and praised, lest the child's self-esteem be damaged. But researchers are now seeing a backlash from the self-esteem movement. An article in Newsweek, July 13, 98, said this, quote, "A new study examined inflated self-esteem, the kind of self-esteem that comes not from actual achievement, but from teachers and parents drumming into kids how great they are. The researchers found that this sort of unjustified self-esteem can trigger hostility and aggression and may even underlie violence, like recent school shootings. Deep down, these students suspect that their feeling of superiority is built on quicksand." End quote. In the long run, students are not really convinced by empty praise. Another Newsweek article from February 17, 92, said that achievement is higher in countries like Japan, where parents don't lavish praise on their children. The article points out that challenging a child to a higher standard is the harder task. It is easier simply to praise a child for what he has done than to come alongside and inspire the child to do the job better. Being a good teacher requires wisdom. It requires insight. It requires vision. In the same way that my teacher, Fred Brooks, made such a difference in the lives of so many computer professionals, you are making a huge difference in our community. Some of you have talked a student into remaining in school, and an important door of opportunity remained open for that individual. Some of you have awakened an interest in literature, and a writer was born. Some of you have encouraged a struggling child, and a world of possibilities came into focus for that person. You will never hear a word of thanks from the majority of your students. By the time they are mature enough to understand their debt to you, they will have no idea how to find you. But this in no way diminishes your accomplishment. When a student is graduating from our school system, there may be credit given to the teachers that have encouraged that student's final achievements. But in fact, every teacher along the way had a part in that student's success. In fact, sometimes our earlier teachers are the most important because their influence comes at a more crucial time. Retirement planners will tell you that the monetary investments you make early in life are the most important because they have the most time to grow. The same is often true of the loving investments we make in preparing our children for life. One of my sons has a neurological disorder, and so, at the age of 3, he was in the early education program at Fabian Elementary. In spite of his disability, he entered Texas A&M last fall as an honor student. He is now a sophomore, and I'm not at all sure he would be there if it weren't for his first teacher, Sandy Quazias, who worked with him and loved him like her own son. I see some nodding heads from people who remember Sandy. The year my son entered kindergarten, Ms. Quazias moved to Germany, but she continued to keep in touch with my son. She would write him letters and occasionally send him books she thought he would like. I remember when he was about 5 and received a letter from Ms. Quazias. I suggested that he might want to write her a letter. He brightened up and said, "I think I will write Miss Sandy a letter. I will write her the letter T." By the way, I have my son's permission to share this, because he too is grateful for the teachers in his life. My son could not handle surprises. He was very upset by any unexpected changes in his environment. So any time Ms. Quazias called in sick, she also took the time to call Luke. At 6 in the morning, we would get a phone call. "May I speak with Luke, please?" She would always let him know when she wouldn't be there, so that he wouldn't be surprised when he arrived at school. We used to worry whether Luke would ever be able to live independently. Now he's in college. And the 2 years when Ms. Quazias was his teacher made all the difference in his life. So why have I chosen the supposedly thankless task of serving on the school board? I do it because teachers make a difference. Teachers made a difference in my life. Teachers made a difference in my son's lives. I admire what you do. And I want to support you in teaching children by helping provide you with the environment, encouragement, and direction to do what you do so well. Thank you.